Well, good morning. The court calls United States v. Bowersox. Counsel for the appellant, please.
Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain James Curtin, and along with Colonel Patricia Hamm, I represent the appellant in this case, Specialist Ryan Bowersox. The granted issue requires a discussion of statutory interpretation as well as the application of the First Amendment to the appellant. 18 U.S.C. 1466A is unconstitutional as applied to Specialist Bowersox because it criminalizes mere possession of animated depictions of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct. Additionally, the plain meaning of Section 1466A(b)(1) required the government to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the subjects of these cartoons are real minors. In Ashcroft v. Free Speech Coalition, the Supreme Court struck down as overbroad the appears-to-be language of the Child Pornography Prevention Act. Because it proscribed as child pornography images that did not involve real minors and had no real impact on the health and safety of children.
You don't disagree that 2252 Alpha currently criminalizes the possession of actual images of actual children, do you?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so let's say that we disagree with you that the language in this statute is reaching the same conduct. Why don't you make the best argument you can as to why it is that the statute's criminalization of possession alone is constitutional under Ashcroft, and why it is or isn't different than the reasoning that supported Osborne versus Ohio and Ferber?
Yes, Your Honor. Under the facts of this case, in order to be constitutional, the statute has to be interpreted as requiring evidence that the animation depicts real children. Ashcroft reiterated the Supreme Court's holding in Ferber that the rationale for removing actual child pornography from the protections of the First Amendment was the fact that those images had a real impact on actual children. It recorded the sexual abuse of children, and it also, even through the possession of those images.
Didn't Ashcroft also take obscenity out of it as well?
Absolutely, Your Honor. The court in Ashcroft reiterated the holding in Roth that obscenity is also an unprotected class of speech under the First Amendment. However, Stanley v. Georgia stands for the proposition that the mere private possession of obscenity is protected under the First Amendment. And that's what
your constitutional argument then is based on Stanley versus Ashcroft? I mean, it uses Ashcroft, but essentially you're making a Stanley argument.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And Ashcroft cites to Stanley favorably.
If I could, just to shortcut what I think the argument is that you need to be making is, let's say that we accept your proposition, obscenity, that the transportation and distribution of obscenity is not constitutionally protected, and similarly, the transportation, et cetera, of child pornography, which can be obscene, even if it's not a real child, similarly, the distribution and production wouldn't be constitutionally protected. So now you have to get it within the privacy of the home. So why don't you make your best argument as to why a barracks room is the same as a home?
Yes, Your Honor.
And just as a side note, if you could explain to me if your argument is that this statute is not constitutional because it prohibits the possession of images that are not real children, how is this an as-applied as opposed to a facial challenge? But why don't you answer the Fourth Amendment, the privacy of the home question first?
Yes, Your Honor. A home for the purposes of the First Amendment, under Stanley, is not the same as a house for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment. The government concedes that this is not a Fourth Amendment case, but then turns to a number of Fourth Amendment cases and an RCM dealing with the application of the Fourth Amendment for the proposition that a barracks room does not have the same protections as a home. The Fourth Amendment analysis is not the proper analysis for the purposes of the First Amendment. The question is, do soldiers have the right to think and to possess material in aid of their thought and fantasies in their barracks room without the government coming into that barracks room and intruding on their right to think and their rights under the First Amendment?
You're going to go through all the factors in this case and explain why they are and why they are not relevant?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's a shared barracks room, et cetera, and check, Your Honor.
So the occupants of that barracks room took pains to make sure that they carved out as much of a private niche as they possibly could in their respective areas. At Joint Appendix 67 through 68, the special agent who conducted the search made it clear that the room was divided in two separate areas, and he took pains only to conduct the search in what he termed as Specialist Bowersock's side of the room. Specialist Bowersock's roommate was there during the search, and the roommate pointed the CID agents to the area of the barracks that was Specialist Bowersock's area in the barracks room. Not only that, Your Honor, but this was not cited in the joint appendix, but Prosecution Exhibit 6 was a diagram of the barracks room. It is clear that the soldiers moved a set of bookshelves into the center of the room in order to divide the room into two separate areas. Further, the testimony of the roommate, both during the motions hearing, 39A for the purpose of the motions, and during trial, during cross-examination, it was clear that he could not see Specialist Bowersock's computer when he came into the room. He would have to go over into Specialist Bowersock's area to look at the computer.
Do you have a case that stands for the proposition that you don't look to Fourth Amendment jurisprudence with respect to expectations of privacy and analyzing whether someplace is or is not a home within the meaning of Stanley, which has been limited by the Supreme Court precisely to the facts of Stanley?
No, Your Honor, I do not. My argument is based off of the purposes for the First Amendment and the purposes for the Fourth Amendment. The reasonable expectation of privacy, well, first off, I would note that these images were contained on Specialist Bowersock's computer, and this court has held that a soldier, even in a shared barracks, retains an expectation of privacy in the files on their computer.
How did they come to the attention of the roommate?
Yes, Your Honor.
There's a question, not a yes. Go ahead.
I apologize, Your Honor.
That's all right.
The roommate came into the barracks room one day, and Specialist Bowersock just stood up. The roommate went to his side of the room, and he thought it was strange, but he went to his side of the room. 5 to 10 minutes later, Specialist Bowersock called his roommate over to his side of the room because he wanted to show his roommate a website that he came upon by accident that he was concerned about. And it turns out that that website was displaying images of child pornography. Specialist Bowersock was seeking advice from his roommate as to how to handle the situation.
What advice did the roommate give?
The roommate told him to report it to the chain of command.
And did he report it to the chain of command?
He did not, Your Honor. However, the material in question in this case is completely unrelated to the actual child pornography that gave rise to that was the basis for the search authorization. At no time did the roommate report ever seeing any animated depictions of minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct. So those images, those depictions, were only found as a result of the search of Specialist Bowersock's computer pursuant to the search authorization.
If this had been charged under B2 instead of B1, would we be here?
Probably not. Well, potentially, Your Honor. Because
well, unless you're mounting a facial challenge to B2, which is irrelevant here.
Right. No, Your Honor. And also, if the government had charged this as having received these images through interstate commerce or any of the other jurisdictional hooks, potentially we wouldn't be here.
Wait, you wouldn't have the Stanley argument then? So you're conceding the Stanley argument with respect to a B2 charge?
Correct, Your Honor, because, the Supreme Court's been clear.
Because you then say it's obscene, or why do you dump your Stanley argument?
Well, I think Stanley could potentially apply under B2 if it were an actual.
Well, doesn't Ashcroft apply under B2? They're virtual images.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, Ashcroft.
And B2 purports to prohibit virtual images.
Yes. Correct.
Why aren't you making the argument under B1 that it doesn't criminalize possession at all? I mean, it criminalizes possession with an intent to distribute.
I'm sorry. B1 does not. It criminalizes.
Sorry, I was looking at A. Apologize for that.
Your Honor, to answer your question, I think Stanley would still apply to B2.
So B2 might be subject to a facial challenge under, well, under a combination of Stanley and Ashcroft.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And it also has constitutional infirmities in that it doesn't incorporate the full Miller test. But the court doesn't have to decide that.
No, we don't have to decide that.
To what extent is your Stanley argument predicated on the language about the contents of one's library rather than one's home? Does that make a difference? Are we supposed to figure out what room, whether this is a room issue or a house issue?
I think that language helps appellant's case, Your Honor, insofar as a computer in today's world can be analogized to a library in 1969, I believe, is when Stanley was decided. So not only in Stanley,
But you've argued we should analogize and try and figure out whether a barracks room is a home. You haven't asked us to figure out whether a barracks room or a computer is a library. Is there a preferred metaphor here from your standpoint, and if so, why?
Your Honor, appellant would prefer the library.
Right, but why? And why should we adopt that metaphor rather than a home?
Because a computer is very much like a library. I mean, all of this material was contained on a computer. A computer has a capability to store vast amounts of knowledge. I mean, a soldier in a barracks room doesn't have room to have an extensive library. And in today's day and age, this books, videos, all this type of media that would ordinarily have been in a library back in 1969 is currently being held on computers. So a computer is exactly like a library in today's environment.
Can we take notice of the use of the fairly ubiquitous Windows Word program now that uses the word library to describe the different contents of the computer on a hard drive?
Sure. And I think, you know, a library would be a place where someone would keep files, and the computer's main purpose is for storing files, all the data.
What happens to your analogy, though? I mean, do you think that it would be protected under cases subsequent to Stanley if you picked up your computer library and carried it over a border and then brought it back into the United States?
I don't think it would be protected under Stanley given the subsequent case law.
But then how does that work?
There is no evidence in this case at all that the computer was moved we're dealing with two different computers, Your Honor.
Right, but you want us to call the computer a library. And all I'm suggesting is it's a movable library, and I don't think you'll disagree that under Stanley, things can't move outside of the house.
Right.
So how does that help or hurt your house versus library argument?
I would just say to the extent that the computer is stored within the home or kept within the home, that's why I don't think you can divorce the library analogy away from the context of the home in Stanley. I mean, to the extent that the computer is kept in the home, and not transported anywhere, the computer can be viewed as a library, just like a library would be in a home in 1969. Additionally, if this court finds that Stanley applies to appellant's case, this court cannot affirm the convictions under Clause 2. The reason is because this court's holding in Wilcox made it clear that when constitutional, specifically First Amendment rights are implicated, there has to be a direct and palpable connection to the military mission or the military environment. This case has absolutely zero evidence of any effect on the military environment or the military mission. I understand this court's holding under Phillips stands for the proposition that Clause 2 does not require actual knowledge from any outside party or an effect on the actual esteem that any outside party has for the armed forces. However, read in light of Wilcox, it's clear that even a Clause 2 conviction requires that direct and palpable connection.
Now, you would have us apply the dissent position in Worley, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
To your statutory argument. And could you please rebut the majority's opinion in Worley rather than just adopt the dissent's arguments? Indicate, for example, why Section C doesn't apply.
Yes, sir.
Why the plain language of Section C doesn't apply if it says that any offense under this section, it does not require any offense under this section to demonstrate that the minor depicted actually exists.
Yes, Your Honor. I see that I'm out of time.
You always can answer my questions.
Yes, sir,
with bonus
Honor.
Time.
Both
sides will.
The plain meaning of the statute is clear that it requires an actual children. There is a distinction between B1 and B2. B1 requires a depiction of a minor. B2 requires a depiction of an image that is or appears to be a minor.
Right. My question is, why doesn't C answer the question?
Yes, Your Honor.
You're ignoring C, and I'm saying, how do you ignore C?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't mean to ignore C. C, by its very language, presupposes that the depiction is of a minor. C specifically says it is not a required element of any offense under this section that the minor depicted actually exists. The purpose of C was to ease the burden on the prosecution in these types of cases. Prosecution, pursuant to C, does not have to prove that the actual identity of the individual depicted. It could also relieve the government of...
Or does the government have to prove that some such person exists?
As opposed
to actual identity?
Insofar as it was a depiction of an actual person, but the government does not have to prove the exact identity of that individual.
So they're supposed to do that with respect to a cartoon?
Yes, Your Honor. If that cartoon depicted an actual child, for instance, if the creator of the cartoon was at the park and saw a little boy and started fantasizing about that little boy.
And you don't think it was possible for the majority in Worley to read it otherwise?
No, Your Honor.
The only way to read it is the way you posit.
Yes, Your Honor. And I could even go into the legislative history if this court would indulge me. The Senate...
Perhaps on rebuttal you can do so unless there are other questions.
I guess just on rebuttal then you can explain to me again your answer to my question is how if we read 1466 Alpha the way you want us to, isn't this sort of possession already covered by 2252 Alpha?
Yes, Your Honor.
This particular act that he's charged with, I don't mean cartoons and things like that. I'm talking about this act.
Yes, sir. I think I understand the question.
Counsel of the government, please.
Chief Judge Baker, may it please the court. I'm Captain Bradley Endicott, who, along with Major Catherine Branley, we represent the United States. In response to the Supreme Court's decision in Ashcroft versus Free Speech Coalition, Congress passed the PROTECT Act to restore and reinvigorate the government's ability to prosecute both virtual child pornography and child pornography crimes. In seeking to eliminate virtual child pornography, Congress created a new federal obscenity statute.
Well, that's an interesting proposition. The Supreme Court says virtual images are not reachable constitutionally. Congress says, we are too. So where does that leave us?
Well, Ashcroft merely held that you couldn't criminalize images that were neither child pornography under the CPPA.
Right, under the CPPA as written.
As written, that was neither child pornography under Ferber or obscene under Miller. In response to the Ashcroft decision, what Congress did was pass a new federal obscenity statute which incorporated a new obscenity definition or element which was lacking in the CPPA.
But you're ignoring the fact that Ferber wasn't a possession case, right? Ferber was a production and distribution case.
Yes, Your Honor. I can't recall the name of the subsequent case which held, but the bottom
line... It was Osborne versus Ohio, and both of those cases, the rationale of both those cases, turned on the involvement of actual children and the immediate and long-term potential for harm to those children.
Yes, Your Honor. That is the distinction between actual child pornography, because you have a documented crime scene of sexual abuse, and that's why it overrides the First Amendment interest.
So if Congress understood Ashcroft the way that you think that it did, then why did it put everything under subsection A except for possession when it should put under subsection B? Right, possession alone. It put producing, distributing, receiving, or possessing with intent to distribute all actions that would fall outside of Ferber and outside of Osborne versus O'Hall, right? And they put possession in subsection B.
Yes, sir, that's the
basis. And then, so explain, A, why they did that if it's all the same and they thought it was fine, and what possible impact on the constitutionality of subsection B, the circumstances in subsection D, which are jurisdictional, only have.
Well, the basic distinction is between A and B is really the distinction only between a distribution type offense and a mere possession type offense. But I think the bottom line rule is
are A and B talking? A1 and B1 talk about the same stuff.
It's essentially the same stuff. That's correct, Justice Tukey. So the central question for the court is whether it's obscene and thus constitutionally unprotected. And Section 1466A is
Didn't Ashcroft reach obscene material as opposed to child pornography, which isn't at stake here?
Ashcroft did not read it, but the government attempted in argument to argue that it would encompass some of these obscene type arguments, but that argument was rejected by the Supreme Court.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It did not reach obscene. It did not reach obscene material, non-child pornography. We're not dealing with child pornography in this case, right?
Not, Your Honor.
We're dealing with obscene material that does not constitute child pornography.
Correct, Your Honor. And what Ashcroft said at pages 245 and 46 of the opinion is that it essentially alluded that if Congress had enacted or had an obscenity element, some of these elements might be prosecutable under the Act.
But what you need to do here, counsel, is if it's not obscene and it's not child pornography, you need to take it outside of Stanley.
Well, that's the central question of whether it's obscene. Whether it's obscene,
but
it's not
what if no one's disagreeing with you that it's obscene?
Yes,
right? What if everyone's saying, yes, this is obscene under anyone's definition, whether it's child pornography or not, right? But you don't disagree that under Miller, obscene material can be possessed in a private home. Right?
In a private home. That's
right.
The
and so explain why, in light of that, B would be constitutionally applied in this case to him possessing these images, which are, well, just for the sake of argument, say obscene, but not child pornography. Okay? Because it's an embarrassment, because it is within Stanley, because it's not within Stanley.
If I'm reading your question correctly, Your Honor, I think that it's asking whether Stanley should apply it in this case. And Stanley should not apply to this case for two central reasons. First, Stanley's holding was an extremely limited holding, limited to the home. Since Stanley was decided, the Supreme Court has rejected consistently expanding it past the confines of the home. And in order for appellant to win, at least as far as the constitutional claim is concerned, this court would necessarily have to expand Stanley past the home into the barracks. The second reason that Stanley should apply is the home is a place with special constitutional significance. This might be the home, according to appellant, in the colloquial or in the informal sense, but this court has to determine whether it's the home in the constitutional sense.
Okay, well, are you saying he has no home?
No, Your Honor. We're not saying that he has no home, but as far as...
Okay, where's his home?
Well, in the context of the barracks room, it doesn't qualify as a home under the Constitution because...
Well, is he then divested of constitutional protection available to someone who lives in a home simply because he is a member of the armed forces and by definition can't live in a home?
Well, a soldier can live in another place.
Assuming one thing or another, you know, assuming arguendo, he can't move off base.
Yes, Justice Tukey, I understand that it's been said that soldiers or service members do not abandon their constitutional rights at the door once they enter the service. But the central question for this court is what door are we talking about? Is it the door to a barracks room where there are less constitutional rights, or is it at home in the constitutional sense?
Well, that's what I'm asking you, and you're going all the way around it.
What's
his home? What can he do to cloak himself and whatever constitutional rights are available to someone who lives in a home?
Well, in comparison,
and isn't that a kind of weird fortuity?
Yes, sir. Well, in no other place has the zone of privacy more defined than the home. So it's the place where the person or the citizen is most secure.
All right. So please answer my question.
So, well, the central answer, Your Honor, is that military barracks are defined by two things: rules and regulations, unlike the home. And that's why the appellant is not subject to the constitutional protections of Stanley.
Well, counsel, why, and I'm, you know, just, you may or may not want to argue by analogy to other cases where we have not extended the zone of privacy that's otherwise afforded individuals because they're in a barracks room. So, for instance, in Markham sorts of cases.
Well, as far as, I think the best comparison as far as the Supreme Court jurisprudence and this court's cases is to distinguish whether the barracks is different. It's really a straightforward comparison of Peyton versus New York versus United States versus McCarthy. Peyton held that the warrantless entry to make an arrest inside a home is constitutionally unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. And the rationale for that entire opinion was really based on the importance of the home. The court noted that the very core of the Fourth Amendment stands the right of a person to retreat inside his home to be free from government intrusion. However, later, in United States v. McCarthy, this court held that Peyton does not apply in the same way to a military barracks.
Okay, if it doesn't apply in the same way, in what way does it apply? That implies it applies in some way. What did we say?
Well, the court essentially said that the barracks room does not provide the same sanctuary as the home, which is the same thing that the D.C. Circuit Court case, D.C. Circuit Court claimed in the Committee for GI Bill case.
What do you say in response to the appellant's argument that we shouldn't be looking at Fourth Amendment jurisprudence with respect to whether someone had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the First Amendment context?
Well, I don't think the court can totally ignore the Fourth Amendment jurisprudence here. We understand that this is really a case for a first impression as far as the zone of privacy is concerned. But the Fourth Amendment is important because especially when we're assessing the importance of the home and trying to distinguish it from the barracks room or see whether it has the same constitutional right. So as far as the question of ranges go, you might have an expectation of privacy inside your home, of course. You might have an expectation of privacy in the Fourth Amendment and maybe in your barracks room, of course, on a computer inside the barracks room. And you might even have one inside a locked door inside your office. But as far as range is concerned, where appellant is allowed to possess or see virtual child pornography, it's much more limited.
This isn't a child pornography case.
It's an obscenity case.
Yeah, that's very different, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor. And
Stanley, okay, then please describe it the way it is.
Yes, Your Honor, a virtual child pornography case, excuse me. So the question...
Wait a minute. He wasn't convicted of possession of child pornography, was he?
No, just the...
He was convicted of possession of obscene material. Yes. And yet you keep calling it child pornography, which has a definite meaning in law.
Well, this court has also alluded to that there's such a thing as virtual child pornography.
But that's not this case.
Well, these are images of children engaged in sexually explicit conduct that are less than...
Well, are we supposed to throw up our hands and just say, okay, this stuff is child pornography?
No, Your Honor.
I don't get the point of your argument.
Well, the point is that virtual child pornography, so long as it's deemed obscene, can be criminalized. And these are, of course...
Okay, you got a Venn diagram here. Here's obscenity, and within the circle of obscenity, there's a smaller circle that's virtual child pornography. What you're saying is all virtual child pornography is obscene, but not all obscene matter is virtual child pornography, right?
Well, so long as the images meet the test set forth in Miller v. California, they're deemed obscene, they can be criminalized, which is what happened in...
But Miller also protects the private use of obscene material, doesn't it?
Well, Stanley v. Georgia says that a citizen would have a constitutional right to possess it inside their home.
Right.
But...
And so now we've come for full circle. Go ahead.
Counsel, just to try and get us out of the full circle, do you concede that your case would be weaker if the same material had been possessed in a private off-base apartment?
Yes, Your Honor. It would be weaker in that that there is less, there's probably less control over the conduct in that context than there is in the barracks room.
Do you agree that your case would be stronger if instead of a private barracks room shared with one individual, it was an open barracks room, such as like at boot camp?
Perhaps it would be a bit stronger, Your Honor, because...
So there's 20 double-deck bunks in one room. Well, I don't know actually what camp looks like in your service, but I mean, you don't think that that's less of a library slash home than a room shared with one other person?
Well, it would seem that since conduct can be regulated in a probably a very wide way in both contexts, Your Honor, that it would the rule would apply equally to show that it's not a home.
Why don't you give us the best facts as to why you think facts, why you think that this was not a library or home under Stanley?
Well, the best facts, Your Honor, would be that he was assigned this roommate, and he lived in here with another soldier. Barracks typically only involve soldiers. They don't allow family members to live in the same place. But as far as facts go, or as far as other facts, but what we think is probably more important is this overall concept of the barracks, actually, and the extent that the commanders have the right to regulate that conduct within the barracks. One of the negative consequences of expanding Stanley to the barracks could diminish the commander's right to address conduct inside the barracks. There's really no serious question. If a soldier possessed an offensive poster was watching an offensive video and it negatively impacted another soldier in the barracks or another soldier in the unit, that the commander would have the prerogative and authority to address that. If Stanley was expanded, it could diminish the soldier's ability to address those types of behaviors, because in the barracks room, there's really no question that conduct from one soldier could negatively impact other soldiers around him. But commanders need, because of the difference of military service, commanders would need to have the authority to address those morale and cohesion issues.
Why do you think the Congress didn't just use the terms that are the terms of art after Ashcroft and just say virtual and actual?
I don't know, Your Honor.
And if it doesn't say virtual and actual, whose argument does that support and why?
If it doesn't say virtual or actual?
Right.
Well,
1466 doesn't use the terms of art that are generally used after Ashcroft by courts and others in terms of actual and virtual. And so we're into this debate over what does C mean, what does this mean, what does that mean? Could Congress have just used actual and virtual to make it express that it applied to both?
Congress could have, Your Honor, but...
Okay, and the fact that they didn't, how does that cut? It's not a trick question. For whom does that cut and why?
I don't think it cuts in either direction, Your Honor, because the most important question, the most important element here is whether it's constitutionally obscene and therefore unprotected under the Constitution. So whether it's virtual child pornography or real child pornography or any other image, so long as it's a depiction, any type of depiction that shows minors engaged sexually...
But appellant is arguing it only applies to actual minors that existed at one point.
Well, a straightforward application of Section 1466A here does not lead to an absurd result, and therefore the court should enforce it according to its...
No, I understand that, but it goes back to why didn't Congress just alleviate this issue by saying we mean both actual and virtual, if it's that clear?
Well, so long as it's obscene, it would be clear. If you had an actual image of a minor, I think the better course for the government, if you have an actual image of a minor engaged in sexually explicit conduct, we have a statute already for that. It's the child pornography statute. So this is for anything that doesn't depict a real child.
Counsel,
so this statute is broad enough to be interpreted to address both.
Okay, counsel, well, irrespective of what Congress meant or what the statute means, the government doesn't disagree that in this case, the images that we're talking about were not real children, right? They were computer-generated images?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and you don't disagree, I don't think, that, or maybe you do, explain how the rationale of Osborne versus Ohio, right, which said that even if you can possess obscene material in the home, you can't possess child pornography in the home. Okay. Explain how the rationale in Osborne versus Ohio supports your argument, assuming that the barracks is a home. All right. We'll assume that for the moment. Explain then why Osborne versus Ohio, the rationale there, takes possession of computer-generated images of what appears to be child pornography outside of Stanley.
Well, I don't think it takes it out. Stanley and Osborne are looking at two different types of images, Your Honor. Well, I'm sorry. Stanley and Osborne were looking at two different types of images. Yeah, essentially they were. Stanley was looking at images that were merely classified as obscene. Osborne was, of course, dealing with actual child pornography, dealing with actual minors. Here, of course, we don't have that. We don't disagree that these are virtual minors engaged in sexually explicit conduct.
Okay, so, but, so even if we agree with you that the statute criminalizes what it criminalizes, what I'm asking you is explain how we take the limitation on Stanley, which Osborne represents, and how we use the rationale in Osborne to say that the possession, assuming for the, I'm not asking you to concede that the Barrett rumors are home, but explain how you take it, how you use the rationale of Osborne versus Ohio to take this particular possession out of Stanley.
Well, it would take it out of that context so long as it would be deemed obscene and constitutionally protected. I hope I'm answering the question.
No, you're not.
But as far as the rationale is concerned, which behind Congress trying to criminalize these images.
I'm not asking you to explain that. I'm asking you how to explain the rationale used in Osborne versus Ohio to say that even though you can keep obscene material in your home, right? That's what Stanley versus Georgia stands for, right? And Osborne versus Ohio said, but child pornography, whether it meets the level, whether it meets obscenity or not, but it's child pornography, you cannot keep in your home. And it gave rationale as to why it was a limitation on Stanley, right? So I'm asking you in this case, where we're dealing with something that we'll agree for the sake of argument is obscene, but I think you've also agreed is not actual child pornography, how we use Osborne versus Ohio to justify possession if, in fact, the criminalization of the possession if, in fact, the barracks room is a home.
Well, child pornography is criminalized, as we said before, under Ferber, merely because it's the First Amendment does not override the state's interest in protecting children. In this case, we don't
protecting children, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, actual real children from victimization.
Yes, Your Honor.
And protecting them from having their images there for the future, right? To continue for continued victimization.
Yes, Your Honor.
So how do those rationale apply with respect to computer-generated images?
Well, the rationale would apply in that the Senate noted, Your Honor, that whether real or lifelike, that virtual child pornography, at page 6 of the Senate report, can fuel the fantasy of pedophiles and often leading to the abuse of sexual children. So the interest is...
But those were all rationales that Justice Kennedy rejected in Ashcroft.
But those rationales would seem to be valid now because of the insertion of the obscenity element, which is likewise constitutionally unprotected. Actual child pornography and virtual child pornography, or obscene virtual child pornography, are criminalized for different reasons, Your Honor. One is because it's deemed obscene, and one is because it's a documented crime scene. So it's there are different rationales here, but in light of the statute, the interest seemed to be...
Your answer is that you can't answer my question.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Counsel, and I know the time's about to expire, but if we go through this...
And counsel, take your time to respond.
The issue of regulation that you've mentioned, I wonder whether that's determinative in that there are individuals in civilian society who live in fairly highly regulated environments, including public housing. Would a person in public housing lose their rights under Stanley?
Not necessarily.
Okay. So let's assume in this case, and I'm not asking to concede, that the barracks, shared barracks, is a home for purposes under Stanley. We would next have to then consider whether Stanley should apply or apply with exceptions in the armed forces. That is, our constitutional analysis has typically asked with respect to a constitutional right that's applicable in whether it's the Fourth or Fifth Amendment area, whether in the armed forces the constitutional right applies either expressly or by necessary implication. So the question here that I'm asking is, let's assume that a barracks has the indicia of a home under Stanley. What would be either the express or necessary implication that would take the possession of obscenity in a shared room outside the protection of Stanley? I understand your argument that barracks are different, But beyond the fact that they're different, what is it about the barracks environment or the shared room environment in the military that would call upon us to create an exception under Stanley in its application to the armed forces in that circumstance?
Well, I don't know if there would be an exception to expand Stanley into the barracks environment because, but even if there was an expansion of Stanley, appellant's conduct was still criminal under Clause 2 of Article 134. This court clearly held that the possession of virtual child pornography is a crime under Article 134. And when assessing the criminality of the possession of virtual child pornography, this court has always looked to its impact on the reputation of the service and good order and discipline. So even if it was expanded, the court wouldn't have to necessarily expand it fully. But the court would have to assess its impact on those elements. So it could still be criminal under Article 134. As far as factors to look at to show that this is not a home or that it's different.
That's not my question. Let's assume that it's a home for purposes of the Stanley analysis. My question is, what then would be the rationale for saying that Stanley should not apply either expressly or by necessary implication? That is, what is the military-specific reason for taking this conduct outside the protection of Stanley, even if we were to assume that for a soldier, the shared barracks room is a home? Just like has been done, as you've mentioned, in the Fourth Amendment cases, where the rationale there has been that there are reasons either expressed or by necessary implication that certain aspects of the Fourth Amendment would not apply in a barracks environment.
Well, it would be similar to as this, comparing whether how this court has in the past applied constitutional rights to service members. Mm-hmm. So in the context of the barracks room, the court could look to two things, essentially, the extent that the command has a right of entry and the extent that conduct can be regulated in the premises. So if a soldier lives in a place that would be more like a private home, those are factors that the court would consider to say that Stanley...
Okay, so you can get in there then. What is there about obscenity that would create the importance of regulation in the military environment?
Well, the mere fact that inside the barracks room, Your Honor, that if someone was viewing obscenity or possesses obscenity, it could negatively impact the soldiers around him. So the commander would definitely have the authority to address that. And furthermore, if it did, if the possession, the mere possession, which this court has held, did impact the reputation of the service and affect the good order and discipline, for that reason as well.
Thank you.
Would you address the appellant's Wilcox argument?
Yes, Your Honor. There are several reasons that the Wilcox should not apply in this case. Wilcox was limited to a particular set of facts and circumstances. Wilcox addressed a situation where a soldier was engaging in his core First Amendment right in speaking out. He's engaging in social political discourse, and this is deemed to be the core First Amendment right. The right that appellant is asserting in this case is not a First Amendment right. The Supreme Court has determined that this is a right found under the Fourth Amendment right to privacy. And if Wilcox is limited to the First Amendment, it should not apply to this Fourth Amendment privacy context. Furthermore, Wilcox has not been applied in any of these subsequent child pornography or virtual child pornography type cases such as United States versus Forney and United States versus Phillips.
Any other questions? All right, thank you, counsel. Appellant, rebuttal, please.
Counsel, if I could ask you a question, just, you know, counsel brought up Wilcox, and you've suggested that that the barracks room is a home for purposes of the First Amendment analysis under Stanley, right?
Yes, sir.
You don't disagree that, well, maybe you do. Let's say that a soldier determined that they wanted to put up a poster in a room that said, you know, the Ku Klux Klan is great. Do you think that the First Amendment would keep the commander from being able to tell them to take that down?
Most likely not, Your Honor. I mean, I think that would have a much more direct effect on potential good order and discipline.
Well, what if it was, now let's take it back to something more common, right? It's just a picture of a buxom, scantily clad woman, and the commander tells him, you know, you need to take that down. Do you think he could do that?
If that image is not obscene, I don't think the commander could do that.
So you think that soldiers, have a constitutional right to have photographs that, while not obscene, would potentially be highly offensive to female staff NCOs that were looking at coming into the barracks to inspect them?
Your Honor, I think that could be regulated if it has a potential of having a direct effect on good order and discipline in the unit. So if that CQ or that staff sergeant comes into that room and is offended by that image on the wall, and that would affect the good order and discipline of the unit, then the commander has an interest, a legitimate interest, in regulating that. But to the extent that it's not exposed to unconsenting adults, which was an issue squarely addressed by the Supreme Court in Stanley, the First Amendment protects the mere private possession of obscenity, and there's no good reason, even citing to good order and discipline, to say that soldiers in a barracks room don't retain that same right.
Do you agree that your argument would be stronger if this had occurred in an off-base apartment?
Potentially, Your Honor. I mean, but I think that would eviscerate any argument that the government would have as far as connection to good order and discipline.
Do you agree that your argument would be weaker if this had taken place in a boot camp type of barracks room with 20 sets of double-decker beds, if that's what they have in your service?
Depending on the facts, yes, Your Honor. I would still hold that if, for instance, you had a password-protected laptop that was secure, that contained these types of images, again, that would go back to Judge Baker's analysis of whether or not a computer is a library. I think the analysis as to whether or not an open bay barracks is a home under the First Amendment, there may be more discussion there, but for instance, if it was a password-protected laptop and there was no potential that unconsenting adults would be exposed to this material, I think the First Amendment would still protect that possession.
Does the record establish whether the computer screen in this room was secured from observation by the shared roommate?
Yes, Your Honor, and I can't remember whether or not it was during the roommate's testimony for the purposes of the motion or whether or not it was his trial testimony, but during cross-examination, it was clear that but for Specialist Bowersox asking him to come over, he would not have been able to see the screen.
And what was it that actually precluded him from walking anywhere in that room and viewing? Was there any rule or regulation that would preclude him from walking over to borrow a pen or something and see the screen when it was open?
Your Honor, if Specialist Bowersox wasn't there,
let's assume he was there and he's watching the otherwise Stanley protected obscenity on his screen. Is there anything in Army rules, regulations, customs, anything established in the record here that would say that the roommate was in any way precluded from coming over and taking a look at what was on the screen when he walked into that area?
Actual regulation, no, Your Honor. I think there is an argument for custom among soldiers to respect each other's privacy when, to the extent that privacy...
Is that custom established on the record in this case or found by the judge?
The custom, no, Your Honor. But if you look at the facts, it's clear that these two soldiers were exercising that belief that, they were able to carve out their own private sections of this room. And Prosecution Exhibit 6, the diagram...
Where in the record does it say that the appellant in this case precluded the roommate from entering that area in any manner? I understand the customs about having their relative space. Where is it established that the roommate was precluded from entering at a time when he could view the obscenity on the screen?
I'm not sure it's there, Your Honor, but if you look at Specialist Bowersock's sworn statement, it says that he has allowed other soldiers to use his computer, but as they did that...
I'm not talking about use of the computer. I'm talking about he's got a shared room, walking into the area occupied by the appellant and seeing what's on the screen by a person who has a shared interest in that room. Is there anything in the record that says that roommate was precluded from walking in under any circumstances when he might view what was on the screen?
Your Honor, there is no evidence that these images were part of any type of screensaver that were coming up on the computer.
That's
to answer your question, I guess not, Your Honor. I mean, I think the record could be read in a way that suggests that he did what he could to limit that possibility, but there is no regulation that prevented his roommate from walking.
Did he ever say, you can't come into my side of the room beyond the bookshelf without asking my permission? Is there anything in the record on that?
There's no evidence of that in the record that I remember, Your Honor.
Are there other questions? Any other questions, counsel? Are you done, or do you want to summarize in 10 seconds or less?
Your Honor, I didn't get a chance to address the questions that remain from my main argument. The last point I would like to make, however, though, is that it is a scary proposition under the government's analysis if we're applying Fourth Amendment jurisprudence to this First Amendment context. It's a scary idea that a commander would have any legitimate right to control the thoughts of a soldier merely by the fact that he's living in the barracks. Subject to your questions, Your Honor, that concludes my argument.
The court thanks counsel, both counsel, for the case. It's now submitted, and we will stand in recess until 10 o'clock. Thank you.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10 o'clock.